from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report. It is the 31st day of July, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. A bit later in the program, I'll talk you through what happened on Friday as it relates to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Washington, D.C. venue. We talked about this with Scott Irwin on Friday, but a more compact view of it this afternoon. And then a bit later, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago and take up the cash grain situation, too. We'll do that with the guys here at the Andersons in Champaign County, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Are you all ready for your first big event of this week tonight in Danville?
Oh, boy, we're fired up, ready to go. Dan stopped by the office for about 2 hours this morning, and, boy, he's got him a laptop computer's got video gaming capability, so I don't know if he's going to have some flying objects on the screen tonight or not, but he's on his way over there already at the Danville. But, yeah, we've got a series of meetings this week, and it's going to be fun, exciting, and hopefully educational and informative to everyone that can make it.
Yeah, not only Dan tonight, but you also have Mr. Clark from Indianapolis to take a look at the weather forecast.
Yep, he does a great job. He has some information he puts on Twitter, and it'll be interesting to see his presentation. Then also on Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to have Bill Graff at our meetings also giving some of our farmers' perspective of things, too.
Yeah, so we've got three events. They all start at 7 o'clock. They're all at the Farm Bureau building. It just depends on where you are. Tonight, it's in Danville. That's the Vermilion County Farm Bureau building in the eastern part of the state. Tomorrow, you'll be in Peoria. And then on Wednesday evening, you'll be in Springfield again, all 7 o'clock, all at the Farm Bureau buildings. And they're open and free for everybody to come to. So if you get a chance, come out and visit with the folks from Bates Commodities. And then Dan Zwicker, of course, will be there along with a few others over that time frame. Now, Kurt, let's talk about what happened in Chicago today. There was some thought that after maybe the market had made some gains on Friday, I suppose that it might managed to stabilize, and I don't know whether you call down three and down six stable or not, but doesn't seem horrible at this point.
Oh, the way it started out, the shoot in the Sunday evening trade at 7 p.m., I thought, wow, you know, this thing could be quite heavy, but compared to where the lows were and how the market reacted during the day, it did hold some lows where it needed to hold technically in through here, so see if we get a so-called turnaround Tuesday and its recovery. A couple events. One is we're seeing some cooler temperatures here in the forecast. Moisture-wise continues to be kind of hit and miss. Also, fundamentally, we're seeing a situation where some of these early crop tours are finding some yields in certain areas are fairly good. So we're kind of removing the uncertainty here a little bit. We're going to have a crop. How big? Well, we're going to probably debate that clear into January of next year. Also, too, I think we saw element of month end. Today was the last day of the month. Commodity funds were fairly long corn, long some beans and wheat, and I think we saw some position squaring for the end of the month there. So there's several factors that kind of came in play here to start the week out on a negative note. We did see export inspections reports this morning. We shipped out 38 million, almost 39 million bushels of corn. That was at the upper end of expectations. Bean shipments was 17.5. That was kind of in the middle. And wheat shipments were right around 21 million bushels, and that was at the upper end of expectations. Fundamentally, the next event we'll kind of see will be this afternoon's crop conditions report. Trade's kind of looking at unchanged to maybe down 1%. Last week, corn conditions were at 62% good to excellent. Beans were at 57% good to excellent. So we'll probably be fairly close to those numbers. The key probably is, well, B is the kind of the areas that we see the gains or setbacks on these conditions reports. I know Iowa has missed quite a bit of the rain here over the last couple events, so all eyes will be on Iowa here this afternoon at 3 o'clock, Todd.
Over the next 30 to 45 days, country movement of corn should come out and be moved into the grain elevator system. Have we heard much about that at this point, and will that be a fundamental suppressing the marketplace?
Well, I think it's going to keep a lid on things. That kind of started here in the mid part of July here as producers kind of started that process. But I know when you look at basis levels, it's fairly weak, actually. You know, we're 28 under for old and new corn. New and old beans are about 35 under. So it kind of signals that there's ample supplies of cash grain out there that might need to find a home. The fear is a year ago when most producers hung on till the very end, at the end of August in through here, and they received that dreaded phone call from the elevator manager wanting to know whether to keep it for another in charge or not. And most producers in tight cash flow situations let a lot of cash grain go at the end of August a year ago. So for the guys that still got cash grain, got to stay awake here for the next 2 weeks and try to catch up moving here to get to where you want to be.
How much you think is left out there? There was a lot left when we got to the grain stocks reports, but I suspect a lot of it has moved. Do you think producers have much in their own hands at this point?
There's still a good chunk out there. We've received, you know, calls daily on some strategies, what to do to get out from under it. When you look at the monthly supply-demand report, there's going to be about 2.37 billion bushels of corn and 410 million bushels of beans that's going to be carried over into the new crop year. So it's a situation where we're not going to run out of supply here anytime soon.
Anything on the livestock side we should take up for the day?
Well, we'll continue to see the meat complex digest some numbers. We're kind of losing our umphing through here. In the cattle complex, we're looking at actually the cash bid hanging in there at a premium to where the board is. And on the hog side of the equation here, we're going to start seeing a slight pickup of numbers here as we move forward. But the sizzle in the pork complex continues to be the bacon side of the equation as pork belly stocks continue to remain at some historically low levels.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight in Danville at the Vermilion County Farm Bureau building. I hope folks can come out to see that. Dan Zwicker will be there and Mike Clark will be there. They'll make some presentations. And then again, Tuesday in Peoria and on Wednesday in Springfield.
Looking forward to it, Todd.
All right. Thanks so much. That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, we'll start up front with NAFTA. Trucks carry more freight between the United States, Mexico, and Canada under the North American Free Trade Agreement than rail cars. The Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation stats last week reported that trucks carried about 63% of all NAFTA freight between May 2016 and May of 2017. U.S. NAFTA freight totaled $98.2 billion during that time. Vehicles and vehicle parts were noted as the top products being moved between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Those statistics come just weeks before the Trump administration is set to renegotiate NAFTA, which includes the top trading partners for U.S. agriculture. Well, let's stay with trade for a moment. Japan's just announced safeguard tariff on frozen U.S. beef could have been prevented with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement the U.S. pulled out of, or a bilateral deal. The U.S. beef industry says had TPP been in effect, or had the U.S. had a bilateral trade deal with Japan like Australia, Tokyo's automatic 50% safeguard tariff from August 1st through next March 31st could have been avoided. The U.S. Meat Export Federation's chief Phil Singh says first quarter U.S. sales triggered the tariff.
The safeguard that they had in TPP was on a yearly basis, and it was much more liberal. So I have the feeling because we just exceeded the amount by only 113 metric tons. It was very, very close under this old administration, but definitely under TPP, but this would not have been the case.
Singh says Japan's WTO-permitted 11.5% tariff hike could have a big impact on frozen beef sales.
This is going to impact the food service market, especially in Japan. They have certain items in their cuisine, which they call the beef bowl, where they have beef on top of rice. This is primarily our frozen short plates. That's 90% of our frozen inventory. And so that's going to have an impact pretty much immediately. There's some inventory in Japan, but as this goes on, if it goes on for, let's say, a month or two, there's going to be more pronounced impact.
Japan is the largest export market for U.S. beef at $1.5 billion. About half of that is frozen. USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue says Japan's higher tariff will impede U.S. beef sales. He has asked Japanese officials to address the concerns, though Singh says a decision to suspend the automatic tariff would have to come from Japan's legislature. Well, a new report from the American Wind Energy Association finds 357 megawatts in new wind energy projects were brought online during the second quarter of the year. Nationally, the United States now has 84,405 megawatts of installed wind power capacity, with more than 52,000 commercial wind turbines currently operating in 41 states, plus Guam and Puerto Rico. Another 25,819 megawatts are under construction or in advanced development, according to the U.S. wind industry. Nearly 80% of current wind turbine construction and advanced development activity is found in the Midwest, Texas, and the Mountain West, as America's rich wind resources draw even more businesses to heartland states. And finally today, the Farm Credit Administration has announced the selection of Wendy Lagarda as the Inspector General. The appointment is effective August 1st. She succeeds Elizabeth Dean, who retires today. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do check out the calendar of events. We're busy beginning this week right through the month of August. Tonight we'll be in Danville with Bates Commodities along with L&M Commodities and Crowley Commodities to present a marketing panel. Dan Zwicker will be one of the featured speakers, and we'll have weather for you as well. That's 7 o'clock this evening at the Vermilion County Farm Bureau Building. It's open and free to everyone. Come on out if you'd like there in Danville tomorrow. We'll repeat part of that process. They'll be in Peoria at the Peoria County Farm Bureau Building, 7 o'clock, and then on Wednesday, and I won't be at this one for sure because I'll be in Perry, Illinois at the Orr Center's 40th anniversary there in the western part of the state, but in Springfield, you can drop by at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. Dan Zwicker will be there too at the Sangamon County Farm Bureau Building. Well, the courts have ruled in favor of biofuels made from corn and soybeans. The U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for Washington, D.C. undertook a case to define the meaning of three words in the renewable fuel standard written by the United States Congress. The three words, a phrase, are inadequate domestic supply. Well, Congress, through them, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin, granted the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, the right to grant a waiver allowing energy producers not to follow the law.
Which common sense would say, yeah, that's you'd need that kind of escape clause in the statute that if a biofuel is not being produced, you can't require someone to consume it.
Well, the Obama administration's EPA interpreted the clause to also mean inadequate domestic demand, and consequently limited the mandated use of biofuels in the United States. The court ruled on how the EPA limited biofuels in 2016. However, it may be, thinks Irwin, that EPA will need to make good actions it took in 2014, 15, and 16. This may mean the gallons of biofuels not mandated for use in those 3 years will have to be produced and used.
That's right. And they even conveniently included a little table in the ruling with their calculations of how much mandate was waived that should not be. In the 3 years, they added up to 2.24 billion gallons of ethanol equivalents was at play here in those cuts that have now been basically declared illegal.
It would take about 800 million bushels of corn to make that much ethanol. However, because there are two parts to the RFS relating to ethanol, it's not likely corn-based ethanol will be the big winner when it comes to making up the lost gallons.
Because of the E10 blend wall, I think the big beneficiary of this rule will ultimately be biodiesel, or more broadly speaking, biomass-based diesel. It's been filling the gaps above the E10 blend wall in the ethanol mandate for a number of years. I don't see how that, why that would change dramatically with this rulemaking.
The backfill will require about 1.5 billion gallons of biodiesel. It would use about 11 billion pounds of feedstock. The number one feedstock is soybean oil.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Greg Johnson is now here from the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me a little bit about the situation there at the Andersons today and what basis looks like.
Well, basis levels are firm. Farmer movement is pretty slow. We do have some farmers cleaning up some bins, but they're not selling. They're just bringing it into the free DP right now and hoping for a little bit of a rally. And, you know, each week that goes by, we get a little bit of rain and in certain places and not enough in other places. But the market just seems to be stuck in this sideways trading range. And so I don't know if farmers are going to continue to hold or if they're going to lower their sights a little bit. But we've seen very little movement from farmers selling either old crop or new crop at this point, and we've got basically a month to go on the old crop before new charges would kick in, so we'll see who blinks first, I guess.
We've been in a sideways trading range for a while, though I think it's expanded in the recent weeks. What are your thoughts moving forward?
Well, December corn has traded as low as 360, as high as almost 420, so there's your 60-cent range. It's a pretty wide range, but the midpoint is 390, and we keep hanging around 390. We were a little bit higher than that overnight, and we finished just a little bit below that. But basically, the trade is factoring in a 5-bushel less yield than what the government's using, and as long as it's only 5 or 6 bushels less, we may have this market pegged about right. If it turns out to be less than that, you know, we could see one more rally in this market. And on the other hand, if the crop is better than what the traders are thinking, then we could go down to the lower end of the range and maybe even make new lows as we go into fall harvest. So there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, especially in the beans. The traders like to think we're getting a handle on the corn, but I think there's so much variability that I'm not sure that I would say that we have a handle on what the overall yield's going to be yet.
And there's a lot of time left yet for the soybean crop too.
Exactly. Yeah, August usually tells the tale, and you know, people say the beans are short. But if we could get, you know, some nice rains in August, you know, short beans can put on a lot of pods and fill out pretty well. On the other hand, if we stay cool and dry, cool is okay. It's not as bad as hot and dry, but the dry part I still think is a concern. We continue to run 60 to 75% of normal rainfall here in Illinois, and while we're, you know, that's okay for a little while, I think at some point in time that will catch up, and we shouldn't expect above average yields with below average rainfall.
And what are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Old crop corn is 353. New corn is 360. Old beans are 974. New beans are 968. And cash wheat is 469.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons joins us on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Unfortunately, the folks from Risk Pulse were not available for our program today. You can always look us up online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.